passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
It is another week here at Post Wrestling. I am John Pollock. He is Wei Ting. And Raw is in the books from Providence, Rhode Island. We will be getting to that in about 2 hours' time. Before that, we have much to discuss. How are you, Wei?
I didn't
know where I was going there.
You arrived at at the destination.
I'm saying
ultimately.
We have a lot to talk about before Raw. That's what I was getting to.
That we do. Yeah. You got there. That's all that matters.
Wei, did you watch the Oscars?
I did, actually.
I was kind of into it this year, more than many years, including last year with the slap seemed to be, for many, like the low point, of the Oscars. So I was glad they cracked a joke about it, but they didn't go overboard with it. The last thing I wanted was just needless reminders of the slap from last year. It's like, okay, get your joke in, but I didn't want it to be the prevailing theme this year. It was a decent show from what I saw. I didn't watch the whole thing or anything, but I thought the monologue was good. I was definitely interested more in some of the movies that I had not seen, that were featured on this, but overall it was decent. Tom Cruise didn't show up. What was up with that?
Probably knew he wasn't going to win for anything.
Well, that's,
Cameron didn't either.
Yeah, no. What are up with these two? I mean, two of like the pillars, and they don't show up for the big award show. Whatever.
I mean,
I think it should be automatic. You don't show up, you can't win the award. That's guaranteed. Like you and all of your castmates too. Like you're disqualified if you're the lead in the movie. That's the onus that is on you by being a leading man. You got to earn all these millions, okay? And if you're not going to just show up for one night, then tough. No one from Top Gun Maverick is eligible. No one from Avatar 2. Tough.
Wow,
you guys
really?
Enjoy your night off because you're giving everyone else, you're dropping the ball big time. That would be my rule as the head of this operation. But what did you enjoy? What did you like? Big night for Encino Man.
I guess so. Yeah. Congrats to Brendan Fraser. I actually didn't see the monologue, so I couldn't really tell you how well Jimmy Kimmel did. I mean, he did about, I think as well as, you know, like I enjoyed him previously in other years. So, I didn't think he like, you know, overtook or like, I guess, I don't know, turned me off in any sort of way. I thought he was a perfectly fine host. For me, you know, it was getting to see some of the speeches in some of the awards here, in particular with Michelle Yeoh and Ki Hoi Kwan, shout out Short Round, for winning for Everything Everywhere All at Once. It was, you know, some really great speeches from those two. Great performance from Rihanna, as well, I thought.
Jamie Lee Curtis won best supporting actress.
Mm-hmm. That she did.
Yeah, it was, she wins the award and they have like the stat over the loudspeaker. It's like Jamie Lee Curtis first appeared in Halloween and then directed last year's Halloween movie. It's like, I guess Halloween would be what she is most known for, but it just seemed like such a, here she's just won an Oscar. Last year she directed the last Halloween movie. Like, okay, well, upwards and onwards, I guess.
I guess it's what she's most recently done.
I love the first Halloween movie, but they've it's certainly been an exhausted franchise. I think most people would admit to that. But congratulations to her. She won. I guess it was a heated race.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, people seem to be really disappointed that Angela Bassett didn't win. Awards, I guess, are subjective. I thought Angela Bassett did great. I'm sure there's justification, like, if you wanted to maybe compare screen time, because I kind of feel like her role was probably not as long as like maybe Jamie Lee Curtis's was in Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I mean,
qualifies as support debatable. Between what's support versus a lead? Like, is it a time?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not entirely sure.
I'm sure they have a very specific definition of it all. I did not see Jamie Lee Curtis's movie, but I did see Black Panther. She was very good in the movie. Did you? What was your last tally of the Best Picture nominees that you did see? I only saw Top Gun Maverick and Elvis, I think. I don't think I saw any others.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw Elvis. I saw Top Gun. I saw Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'm not sure if I saw too many of the others. Like, I probably intended on seeing like Tar or like The Fablemans, and I just never got around to it. I don't know if I'm that interested ultimately. So,
okay. So our Oscar for Best Picture goes to, what would have been your pick, Way, of the ones you saw? What was the best movie you saw?
It was Everything Everywhere All at Once. That was the best movie. Okay. Yeah.
That seems like a good consensus. Do you think I would like it?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. I looked at the runtime. That was my only. It does pass 2 hours, so I mean, buckle up.
Okay.
We're moving on. We don't have time for that. Oscar chat. Okay. Let's keep going.
Expert analysis here, as always.
That's right. I want to start off because coming up WrestleMania week, Way and I are going to be doing shows Monday through Sunday for everybody. For Monday through Friday, the way the format is going to work, we're going to keep our Raw and Dynamite reviews like usual. But for Post Wrestling Cafe members, you will be getting shows Monday through Friday in the afternoon. We will be dropping shows, chatting about WrestleMania week, shows from the night prior, look aheads to WrestleMania weekend, might have a couple guests stopping by. So it will be WrestleMania week at the Post Wrestling Cafe, beginning that Monday afternoon with our first of many, many bonus shows. And then we will still be doing free live shows Saturday night and Sunday night following each night of WrestleMania. So the goal is that by Monday after WrestleMania, you will be so sick of us that Monday's episode of Rewind to Raw, it's going to be me and Way alone here chatting about Raw. That's the goal. But that is all coming up. Great time to jump on board. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door and access to that entire week of bonus shows, which will include a edition of Rewind Away that week as well. Chatting the infamous CM Punk interview on The Art of Wrestling coming up at the end of March. So looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a busy week. A lot of shows coming together, matches being listed. We have our guide up at postwrestling.com, furiously adding to that list as all these announcements come down.
Yeah, postwrestling.com/mania if you want that schedule. But yeah, we'll be here. We'll be covering Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, my goodness.
All week long, WrestleMania week. So join up, sign up right now and get you a whole month plus. This is the perfect time to sample our bonus shows. And obviously, you get to support the site as well. So we appreciate everybody who's joining on board.
Yes. And maybe we will track down a guest or two, maybe that white whale that we have been seeking out all this time. Maybe we will finally land them. We will find out. Look out for all of that. The last week of March, going into WrestleMania weekend. But we'll start off with the news. And unfortunately, a very, very sad story to start off with. And that is the passing of Barrett Lundy, who is the 37-year-old son of Marty Lundy, aka Arn Anderson, and the older brother of Brock Anderson. And not a lot of details that we have heard beyond that he died on Friday, 37 years old, and there's going to be a celebration of life for him this Thursday in Charlotte, North Carolina. And, you know, sadly, this is obviously very similar to what Kevin Nash is going through. And of course, years ago, Ric Flair losing a son as well. It's just tragic way. This is just, and you can see just from the few comments that have been made online through the Arn Anderson's Twitter account, just seems devastating, obviously. So our best thoughts to the Lundy family, 37 years old, that goes without saying. It's tragically young.
I mean, it's, we're talking about, you know, somebody who's 2 years younger than us, and it's, I can't fathom it. I can't fathom it. You know, just now as a father, myself, you know, just what really can you say about something like this? You know, you never want anybody that you know to ever go through it. All our thoughts are with the Lundy family.
We also want to wish all of our best to independent wrestlers Dominic Guarini, Joshua Bishop, Derek Dillinger, and Marino Tenaglia. They were involved in a car accident on Sunday morning. They were en route to a booking, and there was a photo posted on the AIW Twitter account of the car. Thankfully, it sounds like all four are doing okay, and the word I was told is that all of them are in high spirits and there are no major injuries. So it seems like they avoided any serious damage. But obviously it's an aspect of professional wrestling that we sometimes forget about. And that is the travel involved. And of course there was, you know, with Daniel Garcia and company a number of years ago. But you know, there was a time in pro wrestling that this was rather common, that you would have guys that were driving long, long hours in crazy weather, and you would have a lot of car wrecks. But the case here, it seems like all four are doing okay. So we wish them all a quick and speedy recovery, and hopefully are not going to be missing any action. And another health note is superstar Billy Graham that we have updated throughout the past couple of weeks. Most recently, him and his wife, Valerie, dealing with COVID. And Graham has been in hospital now for the majority of the last couple of months in the Mayo Clinic. He is still hospitalized, and what he is dealing with is acute renal failure. He's also dealing with this infection in his skull. He underwent dialysis last week on two occasions, which through his wife stated that he tolerated it well, but he's still dealing with congestion in his lungs and some heart concerns. And the infection, though, in his skull, this is the one that has been the most difficult, they've stated, to treat. And as a result, he has no hearing at the moment as well. So it's just a lot of bad news that has come out of this. As well, it's the financial aspect that they are paying out of their pocket. It's like $200 a day being in the hospital, and they do have a GoFundMe going. And it's, man, in any of these stories, you just hope for like some bit of a glimmer of good news, and there just isn't a whole lot to this. It just seems like it's a mountain of health issues and compounded by financial woes on top of it.
Yeah, just awful. You know, the physical is enough, but to have to worry financially about it all, some not very good news, unfortunately, today.
The other story to get to, and I don't know how much more there is to go through this, but I thought we could just kind of go over all we know about the WWE gambling story, because there have been some updates and some further reporting since last week's original report from Alex Sherman at CNBC. And what we know now, just from some follow-ups. So last week, the Michigan Gaming Control Board, which was one of the two states that was originally mentioned in the first CNBC report, first of all, we know Colorado appears not interested in this. And then you have Michigan that put out a statement that the Michigan Gaming Control Board has not held direct communications with officials from WWE about offering legal wagering in Michigan on its events. Any request for inclusion in their wagering catalog must be submitted by a Michigan licensed operator or platform provider, and the agency has not received a formal request regarding WWE events and wagering. The WWE should work with the gaming industry if it wishes to bring a proposal before the control board. So what that means essentially is that WWE would need to partner up with an existing gaming service such as a DraftKings, FanDuel, or BetMGM. Now, where we get further into that is on CNBC, they did a segment on this with their correspondent, Contessa Brewer, who had stated that, first of all, noting the fact that Colorado, like none of its regulators, have spoken with WWE about approving bets. And then she interviewed BetMGM's CEO, Adam Greenblatt, about the idea of taking bets, legalized bets for WWE. And this, the CEO of BetMGM said, NFW, which somewhere Chris Jericho was watching this and saying, aha, I knew it. I just had the wrong three letters to get over. NFW. Is that one? Would you ever use that in a everyday usage?
Maybe if I was a CEO being interviewed by CNBC and I didn't want to exactly state. Maybe he was referring to a new promotion that he was wanting to speak to instead of the WWE.
Well, on top of that, Contessa Brewer noted that FanDuel has told her that it is highly unlikely it would ever take betting for WWE matches. And so what that tells me is that if they want to navigate this in Michigan and probably elsewhere, it seems like it would be with DraftKings, which does have the most experience working with professional wrestling, with deals with both WWE, with AEW and UFC on top of it. But that's the latest on that front. And Alex Sherman did do an interview with Front Office Sports. And the way it sounds from like his reporting is that he even notes this is a long way away from happening. There's a lot that they would have to go through. And it sounds more like there would be one big match that would become the gambling match. And maybe for this year, it would have been Roman Reigns and Cody at WrestleMania. But it would not be a case of, you know, up and down the card, which does kind of lessen the chaotic nature of putting this together. But, you know, I think we're at such a preliminary stage of this story that I think like it is a lot of regulation and approval they have to go through. And it seems that, you know, with Michigan and Colorado, they have not even processed step one. They have registered in Indiana, but it just seems like we are a long way from this even coming to fruition. And you have to question if they will even get there, if there is this little interest in WWE. And I know that all of the comparisons were made over the weekend. Well, you can bet on the Academy Awards, and just learning more about it, it's like seven states that allow it, and it's very limited as well. Like, there is a lot of caution with that, and you could certainly argue that the Academy Awards are less able to be manipulated than this would be. And I just the reaction from this story, it has gotten a lot of attention, but it's more so the absurdity of it. And maybe that's a bit surprising that people are this shocked by it, but it doesn't seem like gaming regulators are, you know, jumping off their couches to take a call with WWE and are interested in this. So I guess we will see what DraftKings is interested in and if there's really an appetite for this beyond one or two states.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, unlike, you know, a lot of cases where I wish professional wrestling had a bit more respect in the mainstream and that it was taken a bit more seriously, this is sort of like one of those instances where I'm kind of grateful that like this story is kind of being laughed off, because this probably shouldn't happen. And, you know, you have having like a CEO of a BetMGM basically kind of like joking about this in the public eye, and a lot of these stories seemingly just kind of talking about this as if it was really absurd. I think that's the right response, because I just don't think this should be really entertained ultimately.
Are you surprised at all that when the story came out, it didn't have much movement with the stock? The stock is around $80 or so. It's not as though, because the thinking would be, here's another great revenue generator potentially for the company. And this was not a move that was met with, you know, the hope of expectations that this moved the stock in any way.
I mean, I think the stock is ultimately going to be dependent on the TV deals and also the you know, like real kind of concrete things that are going to probably turn into a profit for the company, you know, or the shareholders, I should say, via sale. Something like this, I think, is just more so wishful thinking at this point. And even a shareholder, if they're even aware of the story, probably realizes that it's probably very far away from happening, if at all.
We'll stay on the business front, because Anthem Sports and Entertainment have made a bunch of moves, the biggest being the hiring of former Golden Boy Promotion CEO Richard Schaefer. And what Anthem is doing, they are creating a subsidiary called Anthem Sports Group, which will oversee Impact Wrestling, Invicta FC, which is the all-women's MMA group, and the Fight Network channel. And Richard Schaefer will oversee this, with Scott D'Amore now promoted to president of Impact, Shannon Knapp holding the presidency title with Invicta. And Richard Schaefer is a major name when it comes to combat sports promotion of the past several decades, working with Golden Boy up until 2014, and was involved in some of the biggest fights of that period, including Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather, like all of De La Hoya's like major fights during that time period, and Bernard Hopkins, and the list goes on. So he has a pretty extensive track record, also working with on pay-per-view and live events production. On top of that, he has recently served as the business advisor to John Jones and helped broker this this new contract with the UFC, and that got Jones back into the cage after 3 years as well. So very, very well connected. I'm curious what his outlook is in terms of taking these properties, which I think we can look at Impact and Invicta, and they're relatively niche in their industries, and what their plans are. Because when you look at the infrastructure, it's very impressive what Anthem has together, some of the names that they have put together and the capital that they have behind them, that they can do a lot if they are going to put resources of significance into these companies. And the question is finding that fan base, or being able to secure these big money deals for content creation.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, certainly a guy with this sort of track record attached to a combat sports product or products in Impact Wrestling and Invicta and the Fight Network, you know, that's a really wonderful name to have. It's a really wonderful, as impressed as I think you and I might be at reading this guy's sort of resume. I mean, that's the effect that ultimately I think they want in going into all of these meetings. This isn't just, you know, a guy who's coming in from, I guess, any other sort of like, I don't know, industry. Like, this is a guy who really, really understands the fight business from a business perspective through and through. And I think that's,
and can also probably get a lot of meetings that not every other person could. Like, you know, he's on very good terms with Dana White. And it's like within this industry that they are working within, more so the boxing MMA side. I mean, this is somebody that can open a lot of doors. The question is, what do you see as the future that you are? What is your philosophy towards pay-per-view, towards the idea that you own your content and you're not going out there and seeking these giant television rights deals for an Impact? Or are you? If is it worth it having it on your own property, like an Access TV, or trying to get money for it? And is that money existing in this current economy?
It's a great question. I mean, you know, I think we have a, you know, decent understanding of like where Impact currently ranks, perhaps, you know, in the professional wrestling landscape. And it's at least judging by maybe by ratings and by reach. I mean, I would say a very distant third, if not maybe even a fourth, when you're comparing it to, you know, other companies like MLW or GCW, perhaps.
Wow. Like Women of Wrestling is like, it draws significantly more because of their syndication package as well.
Yeah. So what exactly is their ceiling, and can Schaefer take it anywhere beyond it through other avenues internationally or wherever else? Where would you say Invicta sort of currently ranks in terms of like the MMA fans' appetite?
I would say it's relatively, I would say it's smaller than what Impact is in professional wrestling. Like it's very, very niche in MMA. And part of that, like it's a product that everyone knows, like it's an all women's promotion. And it's certainly during its years when it was, putting its shows out for free. And then later, they were going through pay-per-view and on Fight Pass, like a who's who of women's fighters have gone through there. But we're in an era where the UFC dominates so much of the market share, and then you've got Bellator, and then you've got PFL, and then you've got ONE Championship, that if you're an MMA fan, it's not all that different than professional wrestling, that if you're trying to keep up with everything, it's like this is, you know, farther down the itemized list of MMA to try and keep up with, and it's catering a hardcore fan base. But you know, you can argue where one is in wrestling versus one is in MMA. They're both desperately fighting for market share and ultimately to have profitable divisions. But again, as we always talk about with Anthem, the other part is, even if these companies are losing money on their own, they're also content that fills funnels a greater hole here in Anthem that is fulfilling their television contracts and being programming for them in-house.
To me, one of the biggest takeaways from this story is the knowledge that somehow Sign Guy Dudley is a part of this entire announcement as well.
Yes. Lou DeAngeli, who's actually been working with Impact for about a year, he is officially named as their VP of marketing. And for those that have not followed the career of Lou DeAngeli since the days of ECW, like, he has gone on to become like a very big executive, working as a VP of marketing with Cirque du Soleil, had a similar job in WWE, and now in Impact Wrestling. So there's a lot of like interesting names that have that have joined Anthem over the years, with Shannon Knapp there. There's a lot. Ant Evans, who was a VP with the UFC for a time being. Of course, Steve Harvey. I mean, there's the list goes on. So a lot of like interesting people that, again, I look at the infrastructure, and it's a very like strong group that they have with a lot of industry experience. And Richard Schaefer is sort of the exclamation point at the end of all that. So it's interesting just to see where their moves are. And for something that, you know, investing in something like purchasing an Access TV in this current landscape, like, is that a viable entity running a traditional television network in this day and age? Like, do they have a different streaming strategy than what they're currently utilizing with like Impact Plus, something larger on the combat sports front? All these are questions, and I think that's all things that are going to be tasked with like Richard Schaefer's mandate of creating a vision and what we want to do within 12 to 18 months, and where we want to take this company, and specifically Invicta and Impact. Latest on the New Japan Cup, the second round matches today saw Evil defeat Jeff Cobb with 10 million run-ins and weapon shots, and Evil hitting everything is Evil. And then in the main event, Will Ospreay beat Mark Davis with the Hidden Blade. I got to see the main event, and I thought they had a great match. This was a tremendous singles performance for Mark Davis, who doesn't often get to have a big showcase match like this, and you could not ask for a better opponent. But Ospreay advances, and now the second round will come. Will finish up with David Finlay against Great O'Khan and Zack Sabre Jr. against Shota Umino on Wednesday, and then the third round begins on Friday. So thus far, we've got Sonata against Naito in the next round, Evil against Ospreay, Hirooki Goto against Tama Tonga, and then the winner of Wednesday's matches, they will square off as well. So I would see your I believe that David Finlay might be your favorite in this tournament. I don't see someone the caliber of Ospreay winning this, and your other option would maybe be a Naito, but I don't see them going to Okada and Naito again so quickly. So I would say David Finlay is probably the favorite here. Watch Evil win now.
I guess the only question is, you know, are they confident enough in putting Finlay in the title match and a title loss, you would assume, you know, this early into his Bullet Club run?
Or will it?
Yeah.
I mean, that was
new champion, maybe.
That is a staple of Ghetto's booking, is when he picks the guy, he does not like dip one toe into the water. He goes all in. And that was the same deal with Okada in 2012. Not to say David Finlay is Okada of 2012, but that was the thinking, was like, there's no way this guy can beat Tanahashi. And when he did, was wow, this is way too early. He's not ready for this. And I mean, that would be one way to certainly shake things up with David Finlay. Dave Meltzer has reported that Conan is set to induct Rey Mysterio into the Hall of Fame. And does this increase or decrease your expectation that there is going to be a big angle at the Hall of Fame on the eve of WrestleMania weekend?
So do we know that it's still going to be a part of SmackDown this year?
Yes, it will be immediately following SmackDown.
I think it's very likely, you know, because this is an induction that happens to be so closely tied to a match this year, and because they're talking about it so much in the build up to that particular match, it's very likely you will get some reference to it. But I still hold out sort of like the expectation that we're going to get a very satisfying and heartfelt, real sounding, like real speech from Ray. I think that's at least the expectation. Like, if there is an angle, I don't think it'll take away from the authenticity of that moment, at least.
Do you think that the audience itself is more receptive to storylines and angles during a Hall of Fame when it's piggybacking off of a wrestling show as opposed to its own ticket that you're selling people to, where I think, you know, you go to some of the other Hall of Fame speeches that I don't think people want that kind of thing. But in this new format, do you think that it'll be more readily accepted?
Yeah, I do think so. You know, I mean, you're seeing the Hall of Fame speech in the same setting as you just watched the fictitious play. But, you know, they could make a real statement. I mean, if it was previous years, I wondered if, you know, if Ray and Dominic were involved in a storyline like this, if Dom would sit in the crowd with, you know, Angie and just, you know, like cry at his father's speech. I wonder if that would occur. I think maybe an interesting basis of comparison is looking at the way they treat these press conferences, where, you know, it's a very mixed results. Some guys come out and are Austin Theory. They just completely, you know, play their characters. Others are very much talking as themselves, like a Sami Zayn. Will they give the direction for their talents to, you know, hey, it's the Hall of Fame, treat it like it's real. You're not playing your characters. You're talking as yourselves. Will there even be an opportunity to see much of the talent, you know, because they don't sit. Were they ringside last year? No,
They had the makeshift seats by the entrance, and then they would walk down. So they had the talent like sitting up by the entrance area.
Okay. Yeah, I know it'll be interesting to see, but something tells me because this Ray Dom feud is like such a focal point of this year's WrestleMania, something tells me that they'll probably try to protect that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm really glad they're going with Conan. He is the perfect person to induct Ray, and yeah. I was a bit surprised that it does tell you that they are open to people that don't have much of a WWE history doing, you know, the big induction.
Yeah. The more interesting question is if that person had like a strong, like if that person was an AEW contracted talent, like somebody who is maybe more considered to be like a part of direct competition, if they would feel the same way.
Yeah, it's a question. I don't know if it would necessarily, prevent it or not. You would think that there would be more of an issue like that. But I guess you would have to look at it by a case by case example.
Like Muda, for instance, you know, like Sting, it would be a good choice as somebody to induct him, just, you know, given.
Oh, he'd be a great choice. And it ultimately would come down to the companies, like what is in it for us and who makes that call? Like, is WWE willing to go to AEW to ask for that favor? And what would an AEW want in response to that? I mean, they're, you know, these are two companies that are at war with one another, and how accommodating would they be? Even though that would be the person that you would think so. So we should also add that PW Insider has added that it seems like they are close to finalizing, an agreement that Stacey Keibler would be inducted as well. And that would seem to pair up with what we heard from Mick Foley recently, stating that he had been reached out to induct someone. And perhaps that is
Mick Foley and Stacey Keibler. Did they have much of a like on-screen history? Like,
not on screen, but they were friends. And when you think about, you know, who would you want? I mean, if you were getting inducted and you want someone to give you a great speech, you could do a lot worse than Mick Foley. He would be high up there. And if you've got a friendship with the person, I mean, that's who you're picking. And honestly, like maybe there's one other, but you know, a class of 3 to 4, that to me is sort of the magic number for these ones, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, quick on ratings notes. SmackDown, number one on television Friday night, 2,320,000 viewers, 0.62 in the demo. So this is interesting. It was their highest demo since February 10th, but their lowest overall audience since January 20th. So it seems like what we are getting is that 18 to 49 is going up, even though the viewership was down. It tells me like there is a younger viewership that are watching these shows. The big one was in Canada, where it did over 302,000 viewers. And in the several years I've been tracking all of these numbers in Canada, SmackDown has never topped 300,000 viewers. So I was a bit surprised that it was this one that did it. It was not a crazy episode of SmackDown. Like when you consider the Montreal show last month with a big Sami Zayn speech at the end, but this one was third for the day in viewers among sports programming in Canada, but number one in the demo. And to give you a comparison, like there was curling going on. There was a Blue Jays preseason game in the afternoon, and there was a late Raptors game against the Lakers. And SmackDown was number one in the 25 to 54 demo on Friday. So that is a phenomenal number for SmackDown in Canada. AEW Rampage, on the other hand, also doing a very good number by Rampage standards. And I cannot for the life of me tell you why. I'm hoping, Wei, you have a theory. 497,000 viewers and a 0.15 in the demo. So they were up, they were up significantly in viewers and the demo. 13.5% in viewers, 51% in the demo that they were up from last week. And this was going against way tougher competition than usual because you've got the NCAA tournament going on. So they were going against three separate college games. They were just below Love After Lockup, and they tied on Patrol Live, which almost always beats Rampage. It was their highest 18 to 49 number since January 6th. It was their best 18 to 34 number since December. And this is with the top 11 spots on cable dedicated to college basketball. So if your conclusion is that Rio is a breakout star, this is the week to make that argument. Or Action Andretti and Sammy Guevara. I don't know, because I looked at that lineup and I was like, there will be some good wrestling. I could not fathom that doing a great number. And they ended up doing, you know, by the standards of Rampage, this was a very good Rampage number.
No explanation. I have no idea.
You don't have any clue. I don't know.
Won't even try.
Well, we're probably not going to have some great numbers coming up because Rampage is getting bounced all over the place. This Friday, they will be airing the show at 11:30 p.m. Eastern time. Then next week, the show has been moved to Saturday at 10 p.m. So that will be on March 18th. And then on top of that, the week of Double or Nothing, they were going to do a live show on Wednesday and a live show Friday from the MGM Grand Garden Arena. But due to a scheduling conflict with the network, the Friday show is now off, and they will just do Rampage immediately after Dynamite on the Wednesday. So no Friday night show at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. And on top of it, Rampage is going to air on Saturday night that week instead of Friday, once the NBA game ends, which is the night before Double or Nothing. So that one was unfortunate because you had literally just announced this date the weekend prior, about two nights at MGM Grand, and then before the end of the week, you have to cancel it. But anyway, Rampage is they are at the mercy of the TNT schedule, and they've got NCAA this month, and then the NBA playoffs kick off in May. And wouldn't surprise me if there's more stuff moving around given TNT's NBA coverage.
Yeah.
I'm fine with this because Rewind to SmackDown is going to be starting the next 2 weeks at 10 p.m.
Same. Yeah. I don't know if much effort will be made to make sure, like, we'll watch these matches in DVR. I'm going to assume that these will feel like skippable shows, but, you know, maybe they'll prove us wrong.
AEW owes it to themselves to find out the source of this past weekend's number by having Riho headline this week's show outside of the time slot. And let's see if that audience travels. And if it does, then you got to go all the way with Riho. Riho is the top baby face for this company. Everyone's looking at Jungle Boy, Darby Allin, Adam Cole. It's Riho. Okay. And that's what this past Friday might have proven. And our lineups for the next two nights, NXT will feature an appearance by Johnny Gargano, an update on Roxanne Perez, the showdown we have been waiting for the last 2 years to see. This is going to draw Wei in on Tuesday night. Apollo Crews one-on-one with Dabba Kato, the former Commander Aziz. Gallus defend the NXT tag titles against Pretty Deadly, and an open challenge by Wes Lee for the North American title. Wednesday, Dynamite in Winnipeg has the Trios Championship match with the House of Black, the Elite, and the Jericho Appreciation Society. Orange Cassidy and Jeff Jarrett for the Shazam, Gods of Fury, Gods of War, International Foreign Object Championship. Jon Moxley, Claudio, and Yuta against Hangman Page, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson, who I guess just gets the call when they go to Canada. He did the Toronto tapings, right? TBS Open Challenge with Jade Cargill, the debut of QTV, the Outcasts will appear, and MJF's Re-Bar Mitzvah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some really interesting promotional material AEW's tweeted out with MJF's Re-Bar Mitzvah. A lot of hype going into that one. Looks like an all right show. You know, I'm very curious to see how a Winnipeg crowd reacts, especially to seeing Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. So, yeah.
I think that bar mitzvah segment is going to do tremendous in the numbers.
Perhaps.
I think it has the ability to do that. And that is it for the news. I do want to alert people to a report that Brandon Thurston has done, going and making a open records request with the city of San Antonio, because the Alamo Dome, it is a public venue, and therefore they are privy to like a public request for documentation. And Brandon has done a great job of going through the attendance figures for not just this past year's Royal Rumble, but also the 2017 show from the same venue in San Antonio. And he has gotten his hands on exchanges between someone from the WWE live events sector and someone with the Alamo Dome staff, and how they arrive at the announced number you see on the screen. And pretty much the request is, we want to know what is the biggest number that we can get away with a semblance of credibility behind it. And what they want to do is count, in their words, not mine, anyone with a heartbeat. Even you've got to read this report. It's a great job by Brandon. At patreon.com/WrestleNomics, and maybe we'll talk a bit about it on Wednesday once people have a chance to reach this. But it'll be available for non-subscribers on Thursday. But if you are a patron of WrestleNomics, you can check it out now.
Yeah. I mean, depending on how much press this report gets, I think it's a pretty – I mean, is it that crazy?
No, it's not at all. But I would say if you don't – if you are somebody that – by any means attaches any legitimacy to these numbers, it only confirms what I think anyone assumed prior, and quite frankly knew prior, or for some at least. But this is like in writing and in their own words of how they arrive at these numbers, so it's a very transparent look at why you should always be skeptical of these numbers when they are thrown out and reporting on these numbers, quite honestly. Like, they should not be taken as gospel because they come out in a press release. All right. That is it for us on the news front. But coming up later this week on Tuesday, Wei and I are going to be doing Rewind Away number 127. What is that in Roman numerals? We should convert over to Roman numerals, Wei. Because this week we are chatting The Great American Bash 1988, The Price for Freedom, as Ric Flair defends his championship against Lex Luger, with the Maryland State Athletic Commission overseeing this one. What could go wrong?
A whole lot. Nobody better bleed, because you might get an early finish here.
That's right. This is also the launch of the Tower of Doom. And we are going to go into all facets of the creation of this thing, Road Warrior Animal's thoughts on this this construction years later. And we will also discuss everything going on with Jim Crockett Promotions in this very pivotal year of 1988, where they would be sold by the end of the year. No stock price getting inflated with the expectations of a sale. Endeavor was not interested in Jim Crockett Promotions. The Saudi Investment Fund was not looking to purchase Jim Crockett Promotions. Could you have imagined?
No.
No? Dusty getting into business with the Saudis? I mean, what an alignment that could have been. Well, look out for this on Tuesday. And then later this week, Drive to Survive, Episodes 7 and 8 from Season 5, that will be reviewed with Chris Elliott joining Wei and I on Thursday. And then we've got our third cafe show on Friday night with Rewind to SmackDown at the special start time of 10 p.m. Eastern. So those are just a few of the goodies to look forward to. The whole schedule is up at postwrestling.com, and you can join us here, video.postwrestling.com. So you can see Wei's shock as I read to him from the 1988 Wrestling Observer newsletter. You've got to see the video.
You can, yeah. You don't have to, but
you should.
You can.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Let's get into Raw from Providence, Rhode Island at the Amica Mutual Pavilion, the former Dunkin' Donuts Center. Should we have a rule to just refer to it as its former name?
In this case, I would say sure. Yes.
Okay. Well, kicking things off at the Dunk was Cedric Alexander beating Dante Chen and Akira Tozawa over Trick Williams on main event. Edge starts the show, very loud pop as he comes out, and he is calling out Finn Balor because we've got to end this. The Judgment Day appear. Edge refers to them as Lurch, Pugsley, and Wednesday, accompanying Finn Balor. And Edge agrees to the match challenge for WrestleMania and explains he has wasted the last year of his career with these guys. The year before that, I was wrestling in front of TV screens. I'm running out of time, and you guys are dragging the last sands in the hourglass of my career are being wasted on the Judgment Day. And he admits that Finn Balor did make the Judgment Day better by leaning into them being bitter malcontents, and that combined, they are an Irish, Australian, Mexican, Puerto Rican emo delight, like a bougie drink you would buy at a hipster coffee shop. Would you order this way? And would you get it with ice?
Probably not. No. I like McDonald's coffee. Dollar coffee's for me.
Yeah. The McDonald's coffee does not get a whole lot of shine, but it is very underrated coffee. He made Edge quit back at Extreme Rules, but you still bashed Beth's head in with a chair. And you've made my life a living hell. And the only way for us to settle this is hell in a cell. So Balor says that he's been to hell, and hell spit him out because hell can't handle his demons. And Edge is just like, are you accepting this? Yes. Okay, great. And thus we get the Judgment Day jumping Edge, and out come Dexter Lumis, Candice LeRae, and Johnny Gargano to even the numbers. And then Edge got out of here during the commercial break. He was out of Dunkin' Donuts in a second. And we come back and we've just got an impromptu match.
Yeah. He's like, yo, you guys got this? All right. I got to save up my strength for a Hell in a Cell match at WrestleMania. So I'll see you guys later. I thought Edge sounded great here. You know, I love the fact that he's added this sense of urgency to getting rid of this Judgment Day feud, because he's bound to retire relatively soon, and he doesn't want to waste his time with the Judgment Day because he intends on winning a championship. So I like that he's desperate at this point to finish this so that he can move on. It's like, I guess, you know, like you're doing a test in school and you spent so much time on the first question and you still have all this you have to do. So you're just kind of like really, really wanting to finish this first question so that you can get to the rest. I think with the addition of the stipulation, first of all, it's really great to see that they're allowing Hell's in a Cell to take place outside of the pay-per-view cycle. It tells you maybe at this point we're no longer going to get a Hell in a Cell exclusive pay-per-view, which I think is a positive direction. I think that stipulation in this context, it just elevated this mid-card singles match to something that really does feel like a high-level feature on this WrestleMania card. You add also the tease of Balor introducing the demon character as well. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly really piqued my interest here. You know, it's a feud at this point that certainly demands a stipulation of this type to finally end it. And on a stage this big, it's going to be a spectacle on its own. So the tease of the demon's first appearance at WrestleMania as well, I think is going to be probably tremendous, you know, seeing it in a stadium. So I think both additions are really significant as far as elevating my interest in this match.
So Priest and Dominic take on Johnny Gargano and Dexter Lumis. And Gargano hit a cannonball off the apron. We go through the break. They've got control of Gargano. Corey Graves does bring up the Grayson Waller match at Stand and Deliver. Dominic hits the Three Amigos on Gargano, and then it's Loomis in here who was, man, he was doing his kip-ups into a leg drop, and they had a better crowd than usual, at least during this match. They would kind of get more subdued as the show went on, but I thought the Providence crowd sounded very good for like the first hour of the show. Candace then stops Dominic from using the rope for leverage, so Ripley goes after LeRae, ends up dropping her on the barricade, and then it's Priest who nails Loomis with a clothesline, and there's a frog splash by Dominic. Gargano makes the save, and then we see Loomis apply the head and arm choke onto Dominic, makes the tag to Priest, who hits a spinning roundhouse kick, freeing Dominic, and he hits South of Heaven to pin Loomis in 14 minutes and 2 seconds.
Good match, I thought. You know, crowd was responsive for the whole thing. Dom is a fantastic heel. He gets the biggest reactions up and down this roster, really. I thought Gargano also did really well here. He's always able to shine as this sort of underdog in ring. And Priest, I don't know if he's got any direction for WrestleMania thus far, but I'm sure they're setting him up for something big for Backlash in Puerto Rico. So maybe he's, maybe a great candidate for the Andre this year. And then he goes into Backlash with at least, a thing to be able to say, hey, I deserve a big match.
Then they did, they showed the pre-show angle involving Damage Control jumping Trish Stratus in the back, and Trish is being taken to the trainer's room, and we would get an update later. Omos comes out with MVP, and MVP calls Brock a brilliant athlete but a terrible tactician. You are choosing to fight. Your choice to fight Omos is the worst decision of your career. Like, the worst decision of his career, I think, was fighting Cain Velasquez immediately after he beat Shane Carwin. I thought that was a pretty bad decision on his part. There's probably some others too. But the day after WrestleMania, we might be going back and giving the win here to MVP. Lesnar arrives. It's a little thing, but like, this guy wears the exact same clothes every single appearance. And it just, could he change it up a little? Like, just, does he just own the same jean jacket and jeans that hover and go over his ankles?
That's his uniform.
Or he's like,
Steve Jobs. He doesn't want to choose, he just like has the same thing.
Does he have a drawer, like a whole, like opens up his closet and it's just like 100 jean jackets with the arms cut off?
Perhaps. Yeah. Identical? You think it's easier to get shirts that size?
I don't think it's impossible.
Well, I don't think he's one for style too much.
I guess not. So Lesnar stands in the ring, and dude, this crowd, they start chanting, holy shit, looking at these two big guys staring at one another. Omos makes a fist in front of Brock's face. The crowd then chants Suplex City, and Omos offers his hand, and they go to shake, but then Omos won't let go, and they go to fight, and Lesnar is dumped over the top to the floor, and there's producers out, but Brock is not willing to go back and fight. He backs off. And just has a smile going up. And I thought they were very smart to keep this as limited as possible. And dude, this audience, they were interested in this.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, really. So they're kind of telling the story of Brock actually being scared of Omos. And I wonder how well other crowds are going to respond to it. I think the crowd tonight in Providence really reacted well to just seeing the face to face, like, it's a visual that they were really, really into. I thought the toss over the top rope might have been a bit weird, and I hope that's not a sign of, the actual match to come. I wonder how hard
this will be smooth way. This is going to be like,
I wonder how hard
he's watching his J-cups. He's going to be ready for this.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how hard of a sell it's going to be to try to convince us like Brock Lesnar will be scared of an Omos simply because of the man's size.
In the end, he's given this dude an F5. And I think it's all in how Brock has got to sell for the beginning, which is a lot better than Omos having to sell. And then he makes the comeback like this. This should not be.
How often has Brock been tasked to sell?
Can
he do a good job?
I don't think Omos's offense is going to look particularly great. I think this needs to be short, like really short, like 5 minutes tops, because this is a spot. You are building to a spot. This would be like Wardlow giving the powerbomb to Satnam Singh. It's all in the spot because I don't think anyone wants to see these two do much brawling. And I don't think Omos can do like even a short style Brock match where he throws the guy around. Like, this is kind of the opposite. It's got to be Omos throwing this guy around. And if I'm Brock, like, this dude ain't suplexing me.
I think it could be a decent way to break up the card. You know, it's like visually, I think you saw tonight evidence of this being potentially successful to maybe capture audiences that just like impressive visuals. Like, this is the type of match that might make my dad, you know, stop and actually watch, because it's simple to understand. Big guy versus small guy, or less big guy, I should say.
Okay. Well, if we have a third seat ready either night that these two get assigned. Okay. Cody Rhodes took on LA Knight, and Knight slams Cody's arm into the post. So then Cody does the exact same thing. Knight scales to the top for a superplex. That sets up the break. And then Cody comes back, disaster kick, generates a two count. And then it's the Cody cutter. He does his own Hulk up into the crossroads mode, and he hits the crossroads in 9:37 to win the match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, the match was fine. It was more so the promo afterwards that was the big part of this segment for me.
I thought it was just, you know, like, for all these WrestleMania featured acts, the TV shows are there just to basically keep you in their memory and to showcase their, I guess, whatever they have to offer. And I think Cody's style fits really well within like a WWE main event role. You know, he was very good in AEW, but I'd argue his style fits even better for a WWE. As you know, these crowds started chanting Cody, Cody, Cody.
Cody says he does not work for the Bloodline, and if I want to fight with Kevin Owens or Sami Zayn, I'm allowed to do that. Heyman said not to make this personal, and he calls that a joke. This has been personal since the day I showed up on this show when I was 21 years old. It's personal when I wear an armored suit, not because I think I'm somebody, but because I want to be somebody. And he says that Reigns needs to acknowledge him. I'm not perfect, but since I've come back, I have been, because I'm undefeated. And he says, I grew up as a prince in this industry, but without a crown, no title. And on April 2nd, when the sun goes down on Hollywood, it's going down on Roman's generational run. He's waited his whole life. He will wait no longer. He will pin Roman Reigns and become the first Rhodes to say he is the undisputed WWE Universal Champion.
Mm-hmm. Just amazing. Really, really fantastic. You know, we're a few weeks, you know, after Elimination Chamber, and I think as much as maybe it stung in the moment to not have Sami Zayn be the guy heading into WrestleMania in a prominent featured main event role, Cody, I'm very confident to say, is the right choice. He really is. He's the right choice for a machine like the WWE's, for a stage as grand as WrestleMania. And I think he continues to just exemplify it and, you know, really kind of wash away any sort of maybe resentment that even like the hardest of diehard Sami Zayn fans might have had. He's proving that he deserves this spot week after week with promos like this, more so than even like a guy like a Drew McIntyre, who they continue to tell the story of, like, he went away and came back and became who he is. Like, Cody is the guy who left their system and really came back to be the exact type of guy that they're looking for at the very top. And another outstanding promo here. I think he hasn't had a bad one yet in this entire WWE run.
Yeah, this was great. And to no one's surprise, but also confirming like the date of this being on the second night, as I guess we're going to start to get the separation of these matches and what's happening on what night. Saxton interviewed Seth Rollins, and he said that last week Logan Paul landed the shot of a lifetime, but you can't keep me down. The Miz appears, stating that you lost control of the narrative. I was waiting for Braun Strowman to peek in here. And he informs him that next week Logan Paul will be on Raw for a live edition of Impulsive TV, and Miz will be the guest. So Baron Corbin pops in. He wants to be the guest. He gets turned down. Then he wants to co-host WrestleMania with The Miz. He's turned down. Then he tells Seth that he's a 3-time Golden Gloves champion and he can train Seth. He's also not interested in that. Seth, in fact, says, I would rather get boxing lessons from my baby daughter. And he says, Baron says, he will knock out Rollins faster than Logan Paul did. So they make a match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Compelling stuff with this Baron Corbin direction they're going with. Like, all the twists and turns.
I don't know if it's leading anywhere, but I guess the show again needs these sort of LA Knight and Miz types in order to, you know, set up the actual featured acts.
I'm fine with LA Knight and the Miz, but Baron is just at a lower level than everyone, it seems. And by design, like, they are trying to position him in that light. Mm. Elias is with Rick Boogs. We had the long-awaited, week-long wait for the match with Bronson Reed. Boogs is on the floor taking notes. The most notable thing here is that Elias hit, as was identified, the Symphony. And then Bronson, with a spin slam and the tsunami, pinned him in 2 minutes and 9 seconds. Sort of our only match on the show that really has no attachment to any Mania program. This was just here. And you have to wonder where a Bronson fits in. If there's an Andre Battle Royal, that would seem like a spot, because I don't know if there's anything else for him.
Maybe there's no role for him at WrestleMania. And I think that's fine. The man just, you know, barely began here, had a big, I would say pretty, you know, featured role at Elimination Chamber. But he's also a project that I think is, just because you're heading to WrestleMania doesn't mean you shouldn't be setting up, you know, the future as well. But, you know, he might be looking more towards a SummerSlam or beyond as sort of like his time when he's really hot.
Chad Gable has missing posters as he is searching for Otis. And then Becky and Lita walk past into the trainer's room. We will catch up with them later. Kathy Kelly interviewed Kevin Owens and asks, why have you refused help from Sami Zayn? And Owens says that he asked for help for a long time, but Zayn is, he can't fight with him. Given their history, he wants no part of him. And he looks into the camera. He doesn't want nor need Cody Rhodes' help. So do not come out during my street fight. Keep your attention on Roman Reigns. I don't want you to be the reason that you lose in 2 weeks. A recap of the Cena Austin Theory segment from last week. And earlier today, the Street Profits are in the back. Austin Theory walks by and they laugh at him, calling him Baby John Cena and call him a choke artist. Austin Theory says, you'll probably be unemployed in a few weeks. And I got what I want last week, a big time match at WrestleMania. Whereas you, Montez, were given a big opportunity. And whenever you are, you fall flat on your face. I don't know what that feels like, but when it comes to the smoke, you always choke. Dawkins steps up to him. He issues a challenge and threatens to cook Austin Theory tonight. He's going to cook him. And then Theory gets in the last word, asking what the two of them are doing at WrestleMania. And they're just left silent because they're not booked. They're Dennis stamped.
I thought it was a good backstage interaction here between the two. You know, Theory, they're taking advantage of maybe a lot of the reaction to the Cena segment. It's canon now that Cena completely buried and obliterated Austin Theory, and they have even, you know, the baby faces here teasing him for it. And again, I think it's a way to set up a Theory comeback to all of these other, you know, detractors. I mean, he stands up to the Profits here and he attacks their feelings by attacking one of their sensitivities and saying that this guy's, you know, this partner's better than the other. And it built to like a nice little heated interaction here. It's a unique way to perhaps tell the story of a heel, because, you know, doubting a performer is usually something reserved for like a baby face. But maybe because Theory is actually, like, in real life, seen as somebody who not many people believe in. And maybe because he's ultimately the beneficiary of this Cena program, I feel like it works for him as a heel. So, you know, yeah, we'll see.
The question is going to become if he can, like, win over an audience, whether it is great promos, great matches. And to me, like, he hasn't hit that with me yet. But that's what this program is designed to be. Like, he should beat Cena at Mania. It's following that. And do people see him in a higher light than now? Like, they have gotten very serious with Austin Theory over this last 6 month period. And I still don't feel he has cracked to, you know, where he is looked upon as the natural ascendant to a top position in the company.
Yeah. But the story sets up the forum for him to show that he does deserve it.
That's it. We will see how this goes. Austin Theory takes on Angelo Dawkins. So they had nearly 10 minutes here. Theory sent him into the barricade. He's showing a lot of aggression here. And then Dawkins nails him with a pounce. But then as he goes for a twisting avalanche in the corner, he is met with a forearm smash that sets up A-Town down. And Theory wins clean in 9:41. Then applying the STF onto Dawkins when Montez Ford runs down and probably leads to a match on Raw next week.
Good, strong match, I thought. You know, good showcase of aggression from Theory here. Again, coming off of the embarrassment and wanting to maybe show that he's, not to be dismissed, I guess. Dawkins, as always, continues to look really good, even in these single settings. And it looks like they're using the profits to build Theory ahead of Cena.
Kathy Kelly interviewed Paul Heyman, and he states that their problem is Kevin Owens, and they're going to solve their problem tonight. And the truth will either imprison the mind of Cody Rhodes to make mistakes, or it'll break him. And he calls Cody a compelling and riveting challenger. But by asking Reigns to acknowledge him, what a schmuck. And he says that Roman will be here next Monday in St. Louis, and Cody will have to acknowledge Roman. And that will determine if he is a challenger or a problem. And he is a problem that Roman would personally like to solve. So I guess they've answered their own question, but we will get a segment with these two in the ring next Monday in St. Louis.
Yeah, and I hope Roman actually shows up this time.
Yeah, I mean, now you have a reason to put him in the graphic, but maybe Canada really fell for that graphic last Friday and they were duped.
Could be.
They aired the Hall of Fame video package for Rey Mysterio that ran on Friday. And note that the next inductee will be announced on The Bump this Wednesday by Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't have too many TV shows left to make these announcements. And we're getting a pretty late, you know, series of announcements this year. So I guess why not give it to The Bump?
Do you remember the angle when Stacey Keibler was pregnant in WCW?
Yes. Yes, with David
She
Flair.
Ended up giving birth to an 8x10 photo of Sean Stasiak. But originally, it was going to turn out to be because Stacey Keibler was involved with David Flair. And then we actually reviewed the episode where they did the wedding in 2000. And Stacey runs out on him. And it was going to be determined that the father of the baby was not David Flair, but was Ric Flair. So wouldn't it be... All these years later, it comes full circle that Ric Flair announces Stacey Keibler on The Bump.
The Bump, you know, appropriately named. That would be quite the pull, I suppose, from their WCW's history.
Or we get Keiji Muto Skyping into The Bump receive this.
What would make sense? Well, like, what would make sense for Flair to...
Well, I was going to say Flair has the history with Muto, but he has the history with Stacey Keibler. Maybe they do Muto on one. Well, it's whoever. Doesn't matter. Mysterio comes out and he is thanking the fans for making this award for him. And Dominic interrupts him, says, "Rey earned this honor at the expense of him. You put your entire life into this business and chose these strangers instead of being there for your kids." He said how Rey made Dominic promise to get these good grades in school and he would go out with Dominic, but instead he ditched him for WrestleMania. I want to know what these plans were. Like, are we going to go see a movie or something? Was Rey double booked? Did he not realize WrestleMania was on this particular night?
We'd have to go back to all the WrestleManias Rey Mysterio appeared in. Well, what did you say? What did he turn? What he was? What grade eight? Eighth grade?
Grade eight. So
come on, let's do the math here. Which WrestleMania is
it? What year was Dominic born in?
I don't know.
I think he was born in like 96. So if he was
Dominic Mysterio,
let's make sure. 97 he was born in. So he would be about 14. So 2011.
Okay.
That was the Cody Rhodes year, I think. I think it was Rey and Cody.
Okay.
So man, we've got a double feud going here. We've got Dominic with a history here. Cody was the one who like got the program with Rey and took him away on WrestleMania night when they were supposed to hang out.
I think nicely sets up your title, future title challenge right there.
Perfect. So after he ditched him for WrestleMania, he then said that you promised that you would buy me a new car and his friends pulled up, all driving their brand new Mercedes, and all Ray bought him was a BMW. And it wasn't even an M series. This was a great line. I thought, dude, Dominic is just doing these awesome promos. I think he's just fantastic.
It was a really good line, got a big reaction, and I think online, you know, was the most quotable thing that was said here, which is great. Part of me felt like it might have been a little too comedic and over the top, like, because, you know, we love how over the top he is when he's talking about his jail stuff, but like, since he, like, especially last week, you know, he really established a more serious, realistic vibe with his aggressions towards his father. So did this kind of, you know, maybe swing it more towards like, oh, okay, this is story and he's just kind of making this stuff up a little bit for me? But I mean, it got a great reaction, and really that's probably all that matters.
I actually think the line worked because, you know, from the commentary from Michael Cole that I think certainly needs like more of an explanation, that, you know, Ray was about to throw Dominic out of the house because of his problems. And then you've got this line about, you know, promising to hang out with me and you pick your job over me. I think you do want a bit of a something to just like reassure your audience that Dominic is the spoiled child here, instead of kind of feeling sorry for this kid that just wants to hang out with his dad.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
So that's why I like the line in this. He calls Ray a sad, ugly excuse for a father and a man. And I'm going to let you enjoy your Hall of Fame ceremony, but I'm issuing a challenge to face you at WrestleMania. But Ray, once again, will not fight his own son. He still loves him. There will be no match. So Dominic says Ray is doing what he always does, running away. And the only thing you've taught me is what not to be. Mm-hmm. Dominic was great here. And Ray is just awesome at just looking heartbroken throughout these segments. So these continue to be very, very strong elements of the program.
Yeah, this entire program dating from, you know, the turn itself till now has really been fantastic. And the only question is how long they will delay the match announcement for. Can they delay this all the way until the Hall of Fame?
They could.
I personally don't think so. Like, you have to remember the Hall of Fame is the last thing people will see before WrestleMania itself. And I have a feeling they'll want to put it on the match graphic and have the full card ready before the actual show. And I don't think they need to. Like, I think, you know, on the Raw, or at least like a week before on the SmackDown before, make the match and just let people really kind of salivate over it. You know, this is, I think one of the best stories they've got going into this year. And they continue to tease it really well.
Kathy Kelly is outside the trainer's room. Becky, Lita, and Trish emerge. And Trish says they should have done a better job because all it did was piss me off. And they took off. And this was it. This was, quite the involvement here of this program.
I thought the beatdown in the back looked pretty good, you know. And you know, I've been wanting them to actually give us a story attached to, you know, Trish and Lita coming back beyond just, hey, it's Trish and Lita coming back, you know, giving us a reason why they are motivated to, you know, attack their opponents. And I think this is at least a start, but I also feel like I hope to see this built a little bit further. Like, what, you know, what exactly are Bayley's issues with Trish or vice versa?
Yeah, you could certainly hone in on that a bit more over these next few weeks, so it doesn't feel as much as it's just a six-woman tag that has the, you know, the stars from the past doing the match. But you do have 2 weeks to, you know.
Yeah, I want to hear some like good material, like some good promos from Trish. You know, online this week they had an exchange where like I think Bayley referred to one of the WrestleManias where they lost their tag titles, her and Sasha, and like Trish was consoling them. Like, there's history, you know, and especially like when it comes to fandom, you know, but between somebody like a Bayley or a Dakota, and I'm sure even in EO towards Lita and Trish. And I just want to hear a bit more of that rather than just, you know, hey, here's a match.
What would the editing of that video be of them losing the tag titles? Would it be reminiscent of Cyril Gane losing to Francis Ngannou on the Countdown special?
I don't know what that was. What was that?
When
they,
they pretty much get rid edited of Sasha? Around the existence of Francis Ngannou.
Well, if somebody's rolling and crying on the floor, you don't necessarily need to see their face. So there's editing you could do there.
I will mention that for this weekend, what they're doing for the A&E biography, instead of one 2-hour documentary, they're doing two 1 hour versions, and they, the first hour is Jerry Lawler, which 60 minutes with commercials seems very tough to do on Jerry Lawler. And then the other hour is on Page, and they did promote the Page documentary, through the ads that were running. So
yeah,
just interesting that those are,
well, potentially it was in the works, like before she might have even,
I'm sure it was. And that's why they're doing this, and maybe just cut it down that they didn't want to do a whole 2 hour version on one of them or both of them, I guess. Cause Jerry yeah. Lawler, you could easily do 2 hours on Jerry Lawler and have plenty, left at, but they will squeeze that into an hour. Seth Rollins. Oh, first we got the latest, movie trailer, and this was a parody of Stranger Things with Rhea Ripley playing Eleven and John Cena as Dr. Brenner. I thought this one was, I still think the Joker one was the best. This would be my number two, because the other ones, the Top Gun and Titanic, were not great.
I agree. I mean, I didn't really watch all that much of Stranger Things beyond the first season, so this might have not been a scene that immediately kind of catered towards me, but I could tell that it was probably a bigger hit than those other two were, and maybe even the first one.
They should have been maybe a little bit more. I don't know. Do you feel if they had been contemporary and tried in the last few weeks to do ones of like ones that have all this Oscar buzz, do you think that they would have been better, or do you think like the classic titles are the way to go for parody?
I think the classics, because how many people are going to recognize like?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, I don't think it would get a whale reference, or I mean, it's just I don't know if it would resonate as much given
the Banshees of Inisherin. Like, I don't like. Do you know what that trailer looks like?
Yeah,
you know?
You're right. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins and Baron Corbin. The Miz is out on commentary. Miz calls Rollins' theme the most annoying song, and Corey Graves says, "Well, it isn't Baby Shark."
I'm already well familiar.
Oh, yeah. You're into Baby Shark already. Well,
yeah.
Just as I warn every parent, stay away from the Wiggles. That's all I ask. Anyway, Miz gets tossed into the ring. Seth comes off his back and stomps Corbin to win in 2:24. Just nothing here. It was quick.
A nothing match. You know, the most you can ask for from some of these is like a cool highlight reel finish. And I thought you had that here with, Rollins jumping off of the Miz, like doing Super Mario, basically, and getting to
should have had the boots on.
You're right. What happened to that?
That was a 1 week thing. That was a very expensive 1 week experiment.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's saving it for WrestleMania.
You've worn them now. It's to me, that would have been my WrestleMania gear that I come out wearing those boots for.
You should have done it March 10th. Mario Day.
Is that Mario Day?
Oh. Yeah, M-A-R-1-O.
Oh my God, really? That's hilarious. I've never heard of that in my life. Gable is searching for Otis, and Ali appears, and they find Otis doing a photo shoot. It was not that hidden. And Otis, they state, is not cosmetically cleared to wrestle tonight in his previously scheduled match, so it's postponed. Gable offers to pose with him, but then they state, "You broke the camera," and they reference the Vanderpump Rules, which is another show I don't watch. Don't look at me for pop culture integration. And Gable wants to go cram with Otis, but Otis leaves with the maximum male models.
Yeah, I mean, that's all well and good. All this Otis maximum male model stuff, I'm glad they're getting some airtime. What's going on with Ali? What's up with Mustafa Ali? What's the latest with him? He's like, he's got a new character now. He's playing
positive.
Yeah. But like, he's like, what is this supposed to be? Like, it's like really over the top. He's got like a turtleneck on or something. What is this?
This will be the first 15 minutes of his future appearance on Talk is Jericho.
Huh. Okay. Yeah.
This will be rock bottom, probably for him in hindsight. Even a positive guy like Ali, which the man is positive, but I don't think this is probably what he had in mind when he thought, hey, I can be a really uplifting character for the youth.
Is he building material for like, his comeback to the WWE maybe in 10 years, and then he could say like, I survived this phase, Cody survived Stardust.
Well, the clock's ticking. You got to get moving at this point. Yeah. It's time to go. Bianca Belair and Chelsea Green with Carmella in the corner. There was a standing moonsault by Belair and then a cheap shot from Carmella from the floor. After the break, Belair stops a curb stomp, sending Green into the turnbuckle. Carmella's on the apron and Belair goes for a handspring, knocking Carmella to the floor, but then Green gets her knees up on the moonsault. Belair stops it on Prettier, and then there's a forearm smash by Green, but then gets nailed with the KOD, and Belair wins in 8 minutes and 7 seconds. Carmel and Green jump Belair, and then Asuka runs down to save her WrestleMania opponent, head kicks Chelsea, and then hits a spinning back fist as Belair hits her with a spine buster, and then Asuka takes the women's title, pulls it away from Bianca, and then starts dancing with the belt, and then starts laughing maniacally as she spits up the blue mist and puts the belt down. The crowd didn't know how to react to this, and it was very long at the end. I'm just hoping these two have a really great match at WrestleMania, and it's so great that no one is going to remember how they got there.
Yeah, that's ultimately, I mean, it's why they made the match, because I think they're pretty certain that these two will have a really good match. But unfortunately, they haven't really found the way to create a compelling story between the two. You know, they can only rely on the formula of, like, you know, beating up these sort of mid-card TV jobbers for so long. They've already gone through Carmella. They've already gone through Chelsea Green. Now
they're going to team up against them.
Yeah, it's just going to be an endless cycle, unfortunately. Again,
there is a way that you could promote this in a compelling way with, like, two of, like, your signature stars. They've never had a big, title match like this. It sure beats what we're getting. I think this is one of the worst builds for WrestleMania of any of the matches.
There's an argument for it, certainly, because there's some strong builds and then ones that are just kind of, like, there. And I would say this is one that's just kind of there. They haven't really figured out a way to tell a story with Asuka.
The story is, I've won the Royal Rumble, and there's a long time between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. That's the story.
But the onus is, anytime you're going up against a wrestler who isn't really cutting too many promos, like, the onus is on the person who does cut promos. And I think, like, you know, in the past, like, we've seen people go up against Asuka and do a pretty decent job. Like, Becky, I think, has done a pretty good job. Bianca Belair in this instance as a baby face, which is another handicap, I think, you know, which is another negative. They haven't given Bianca anything interesting to say in relation to Asuka. What makes this opponent for Bianca Belair any different from any of the others? Why does she care so much about defending this championship at WrestleMania? What is she going after with this win? And I just haven't seen anything from her.
The mist is blue.
That's why she wants the win?
That's the unknown. That's the threat that she is dealing with.
But, you know, like, I think she suffered from the same thing in the Alexa feud. They just, like, there's just really been nothing, no real material for her to, like, you know, certainly sink herself into, that feels real. They just haven't found the solution yet.
And the main event, street fight between Solo Sikoa and Kevin Owens. They brawl immediately. The crowd, they just want a table. Just give us a table. Owens finally brings one out. Huge pop. Then Owens gets sent over the desk. So Sikoa puts the table back underneath and the crowd's pissed. We go to break. And I imagine you were not watching some of the ads, but they're promoting Canada's Got Talent, which features Trish Stratus as one of the judges. And she was not on this ad, but whoever was yells out, "Canada's Got Talent, only 2 weeks away." The only problem is then the date comes up. It starts on March 21st.
Uh-oh. Oops. Somebody forgot to swap out the right ad.
I imagine they did a bunch of these for each week, and this was not up to the current calendar. I think daylight savings time really threw them off, maybe. We come back from break. Owens attacks him with a chair, and he sets up six chairs upright in the ring, and he lays Sikoa across the chairs, but then Sikoa stops him. They fight on the turnbuckle, and you know how this one's ending. It's not Sikoa. Owens gets sent off the top and lands back first across these chairs. But then he kicks out and they continue, and Owens fights on, rams him into the post. There's a cannonball into the barricade. Then they fight into the crowd. They fight by the entranceway and they go backstage, where Owens walks into a pair of super kicks from the Usos. They drag Kevin's lifeless body back to the ring, double super kicks and a Samoan spike. Sikoa wins in 11 minutes and 38 seconds, and Owens is spitting up on the mat to end the show because he has no friends by his own choice, and he is left within an inch of his life. But I thought these two had a really good match. I enjoyed this a lot.
A hell of a match, you know, for the third hour on an edition of Raw. I think you're talking about two of the best brawlers on this roster. These two were, especially Kevin Owens, you know, he was treating this match like it was a pay-per-view match. And I think that's always the type of effort you can expect from a Kevin Owens. And again, like, I continue to be amazed really at Solo Sikoa, how well he's adapted into like frequent main event role on these TV shows. And he just feels like he completely belongs there. For him to achieve like that level of confidence and just like how good he's able to be this early into his run, I think is really just really incredible. You know, this is certainly the type of match that I like seeing at the end of these 3 hour shows, because they are energetic enough that like, even, and this was a great crowd that didn't really necessarily need it, but because this match was so good, I thought it took them, you know, to an even higher level.
Yeah. Good match. I would say the best match on the show. So mm-hmm. That was Raw with 2 more weeks to go until WrestleMania. And next week they are in St. Louis with Roman Reigns. And what else did they announce for next week? Impulsive TV with Logan Paul.
Okay. Yeah. Let's get to some of your feedback. Forum.postwrestling.com. Also, super chats we are taking. And this one is a pretty interesting topic that's come up. William Rom sends $5 and says, your thoughts on the Bray Wyatt situation. Conflicting reports from Ryan Frederick of F4W and Fightful. What would you do with Lashley now for WrestleMania?
Yeah, so Bobby Lashley wasn't on the show. And yeah, it is, it has been, brought up of like where Bray Wyatt has been, because he hasn't been on TV for several weeks and was not at the live events over the weekend. So, one report had stated that he might be off WrestleMania. Fightful has reported he is dealing with a physical issue. And if you want to go by what Bobby Lashley put out tonight, he did put out a message just stating essentially, I don't care who I face at WrestleMania. I'm paraphrasing, but he was not on the show tonight. And I can't say for certain what the issue is that has led to Bray Wyatt being off. But, you know, certainly they are going to have to make a decision if by any means that match is in jeopardy, and where you go with it. If you just do a hard switch with Lashley, if you go with like Uncle Howdy as your backup, or if Bray Wyatt is, you know, he is good to go and this is just back on track. You do have, you know, it's not like WrestleMania is tomorrow, so they do have time to rectify the situation. But I can't say for certain what the issue is.
Yeah, we can't say either. It's certainly gives me maybe a bit more reason to believe that the match isn't happening when Bobby Lashley himself might tweet a message like this. So, I was not looking forward to the match anyway. And I feel like there's so many other better opponents for Bobby Lashley, come WrestleMania. So, you know, what would you do with him? Who could you see that might pair up better with the Lashley?
I mean, you could certainly, you could come up with, you know, it's not going to be the most ideal scenario because a lot of the key people are all set up right now. But you do have some people like a Bronson Reed. You could incorporate the Hurt Business, which was forgotten about again as soon as they got back together. The Street Profits are without opponents. Again, these are not, you know, maybe the most ideal if you're Bobby Lashley, but you're looking at a backup plan with a limited amount of people that don't have plans.
Is he a heel or a babyface?
Well, what week is it? He can be either. And that maybe is helpful in a situation like this, but, And again, there's still the possibility that this is, that Bray Wyatt turns out to be fine in time for WrestleMania. So we will see, but cannot confirm what the issue is. Benjamin writes, doesn't seem like a smart babyface logic to have a street fight, no DQ match with a faction that's been cheating and triple teaming against you for months. I thought there were some good promos on the show tonight. Austin Theory, Cody Rhodes, Paul Heyman, pretty decent segments. The Bianca Belair, Asuka stuff still feels a bit confusing, although Asuka dancing with the belt while Bianca watched her was pretty magical until the blue goo. Otis, the supermodel. I'm all in if we get more photo shoots like that. Loved Gable whooshing Ali. That whole segment was gold. Mysterios are an addictive soap melodrama. Can't look away.
Let's go to Denise from Georgia, who says, this Raw stunk. Hell in a Cell is all right. A good way to hide Edge, and hopefully this program will be done after. I don't know what hiding Edge necessarily needs. He's been really good, I would say. So I don't know what hiding he's referring to. Since returning, Bronson has been spinning his wheels. Let this man do something meaningful. Week after week, they make Bianca look like a geek instead of her being portrayed as a fearless champion. I'm only interested in Roman and Cody for the curiosity of them pulling the trigger on Devontae. I feel the build for Mania has been lazy, and with 19 days to go, they need to pull the lead out of their asses and perk some interest. Take care, good people.
Take the lead out of their asses. Well, I mean, they're... To whatever you want to say about the build to WrestleMania, like, dude, their business is on fire at the moment. And it is not just, well, it's WrestleMania season and numbers are up. Like, they are doing phenomenal business every weekend. Their TV numbers are tremendous. And WrestleMania is going to be very, very big this year. And essentially, like, you can certainly look up and down the card of what clicks, what doesn't click for you. At the end of the day, it's being built on one match primarily, and it's hitting on all cylinders. And from all available metrics, that is working. And that's going to be the key for the lion's share of the interest for Mania. Last one is Jermaine from Chicago. Raw was a show I watched. I don't know what's the worst. The build, Omos versus Brock, or Bianca versus Asuka. It's so tiring that in 2023, the WWE books people whose second language is English the way they book Asuka. It's insulting. If you won't get her a manager to speak for her, then what about cutting a promo in Japanese with subtitles? Imagine if it was reverse and they had Americans in Japan speaking English and making exaggerated faces and that's all they did. It wouldn't happen. I thought Triple H would be more progressive. It's a huge problem for Asian and Latinos in WWE. Next, why would The Miz stand next to Rollins in the back and be all cool with him when he threw him out of the ring last week and curb stomped him the week before that? It makes no sense. Lastly, the in-ring in the WWE means less and less each week. So many matches you can hear a pin drop or a spot called. WWE fans like soap operas, not wrestling. Good night.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of points that Jermaine came in. He just had a barrel full to make and got them all out here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, subtitles, I think, would be wonderful, but they've just never done it, you know, not on the main roster, at least. I don't know if it's because they prefer their product to all take place like out of the ring, or maybe that's just the way they want to portray an Asuka character. Having a manager would solve that, but they also don't seem to like to do managers either. So the program certainly needs something, and more than, you know, Carmella and Chelsea Green as just sort of like the recipients of, you know, their attacks every single week. It's a problem. I mean, it's a bigger problem this year, maybe because Asuka's in such a bigger spotlight, than previous, but I mean, she's had WrestleMania matches before in the past, but she's also had things like the undefeated streak, maybe like a more clear heel character, to go up against. This time she's going up against a babyface, and It's a bigger challenge, and they haven't really kind of, you know, lived up to maybe those expectations yet.
Yeah, there are many ways to get around this. I don't look as the language barrier being this this unsolvable problem. I think it is, you know, that's what it comes down to, like a presentation. And with Asuka, like, this is not a new character. This is someone that we have seen get over in many different iterations in this company as well. But I've been very disappointed with that buildup, because I think that you tell someone on paper this match, that's a very intriguing direction. And here we are so far, and it has not been intriguing in the lead up so far. There you go. Thank you for the feedback tonight. And we are back Tuesday night. Great American Bash 1988, the price for freedom. How much did that pay-per-view cost? That was the price of freedom in 1988. Apply it to inflation, It's a much more expensive price for freedom in 2023. But your price for freedom is $6. It gets you your access to the Post Wrestling Cafe. Three bonus shows this week, including Drive to Survive, Season Number 5, Rewind to SmackDown. Again, special start time Friday night of 10 Eastern. And we'll also have a UFC 286 post show this Saturday night. Because, Wei, I'm so excited for a UK pay-per-view where the main card starts at 5 p.m. instead of 10. It's going to be it's going to be a tremendous, tremendous night.
You can go to sleep early.
I can, yes. So that is all coming up. We will chat with you on Tuesday and Wednesday following Dynamite. Goodbye.